Welcome to the Sober Mofos podcast, where we discuss how to get sober, how to stay sober, and how to live a healthy, happy life in sobriety. My name is Dirk Foster, and I'm a sobriety coach and author, and I've been sober since 2007. This is podcast number two. So today I want to talk about how I knew it was time to get sober. You know, what were the red flags? What were the warning signs? How did I come to the decision that it was time for me to get sober? Before I start, if you get a chance, please visit my website, which is SoberMofos.com. You can also visit my YouTube channel, which is SoberMofos. You'll find all sorts of information and articles and blog posts and videos, books, audiobooks, all sorts of things on my website and YouTube channel. So check them out if you get a chance, okay? So I often wonder if I ever would have bothered even getting sober if the physical results of my drinking hadn't become so brutal. In many ways, it was the physical deterioration I experienced that finally drove me to seek help for my addiction. Otherwise, I might have just kept going until I dropped dead, to be truthful. You know, as a teenager, as a young man, hangovers were barely noticeable. They were like minor inconveniences, something to chuckle at proudly, like feeling a bit sore after a tough workout at the gym. No big deal, a slight morning headache and maybe a sour stomach. Those were my hangovers. But certainly they were nothing close to those skull-crushing, stomach-churning onslaughts that alcohol inflicted on my body in middle age. And I want to clarify that I got sober when I was 43 years old, okay? So when I say middle age, that's what I'm talking about. One of the reasons so many people consider sobriety in their 30s and 40s, and this is just what I've discovered over the years, is that the physical demands of drinking are no longer fun and cute. The older we get, the more brutal and crippling the hangovers become. You might have noticed this yourself. We lose the ability to deal with the flood of poison that we're pouring into our bodies. And it's important to realize that alcohol is simply that. It's poison. Okay, that's all it is. There is no nutritional value to alcohol. It serves no purpose other than to alter the chemical composition of your brain temporarily. Okay, that's all alcohol does. So if you drink long enough and hard enough, your body will begin to rebel against the poison that's washing through your stomach and your liver and your bloodstream. And the human body can only take so much abuse before it begins to break down from the onslaught. And if, like me, you're also adding cigarettes and drugs into the mix, it's only a matter of time before your body collapses from exhaustion. So I first began to notice the extent of my physiological pollution like in my late 20s. That's when it first started to really appear. The hangovers were becoming increasingly intense. It was like, it felt like waking up after a night of fist fights. And, you know, fist fights where I lost every battle. That's what it felt like. I felt battered and bruised. My entire body would ache. I would be sore. I started developing terrible, unbearable headaches. I would wake up dizzy and confused. Nausea would overwhelm me, not just in the morning, but all day. Eventually, I began to experience intense anxiety and paranoia, along with morning tremors. Oh, morning tremors. If you've never experienced alcohol-induced tremors, I can confirm that there's nothing quite as disturbing and frightening the first few times they occur. Eventually, I began drinking in the late afternoon just to make the anxiety and shaking, you know, go away, subside. So by the time I hit rock bottom, my body was basically rotting from the inside. My internal organs were no longer functioning correctly. My doctor told me I had fatty liver disease. I had high blood pressure. I was bloated and looked 20 years older than my actual age. I suffered from constant stomach cramps. I experienced night sweats and intense trembling in my internal organs every morning. My hands shook so badly that it was challenging to sip a cup of coffee. So over the last few years of my drinking, I had taken myself to the hospital on multiple occasions, you know, usually thinking I was dying or having a heart attack. I struggled with constant paranoia. I was living through a never-ending cycle of drinking that made me feel horrible 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the worst part of the physical deterioration that many of us experience is that the alcohol we rely on no longer seems to work anymore. For me, this was a terrible and frightening revelation when drinking no longer made me feel better. Drinking started to make me feel worse, both physically and mentally. I would drink more and more, hoping and waiting for the misery to lift, but instead it just made me feel horrible and sick. It sucked. I've spoken to numerous alcoholics over the years that have experienced the same phenomenon. The booze simply stops working at some point. Talk about bitter irony. Eventually, the alcohol no longer provides relief and comfort as it did for so many years. Now it just adds to our misery and discomfort. But, you know, we keep drinking anyway because we don't know what else to do. And that was what happened to me. We become so enmeshed. I became so enmeshed in relying on this one thing, alcohol, that no other alternative seemed possible or even achievable. My body became polluted to the point where I no longer thought it would last much longer. Since those days, I've seen many people, including friends I love, reach the same physical state of deterioration. But instead of reaching out for help, they continued on the path they were following, drinking until their bodies simply gave out, sending them to a painful and, you know, sometimes an early grave. Now, I want to take a moment to talk about the concept of hope, H-O-P-E, hope. Why is hope so important to recovery, to getting clean? Well, without hope, life loses its meaning. Hope lifts us up. Hope gets us out of bed in the morning. Hope allows us to sleep peacefully at night. Hope provides us with anticipation and joy. Hope brings light into darkness. Hope helps us to push forward through difficult times. It's hope that gives us a desire to grow and improve as we, you know, plan for the future. So as soon as we start to feel hopeless, life loses its color and flavor. Depression sets in and we become cynical and angry. We feel defeated. You know, we start to ask, what's the point? Who gives a crap? So once this started happening, once I began to feel hopeless, I drank more in an attempt to recapture the optimism and courage alcohol used to deliver. But my efforts to achieve hope from a bottle were all in vain. The booze no longer worked. I began to spin downward in an accelerated rate of speed. I really did. I started like falling down the elevator shaft faster and faster. So one day just bled into the next in this monotonous, boring cycle of drinking and sleeping and eating and drinking and sleeping and eating and drinking. These were the days near the end of my three decade run when I never bothered to get out of bed. You know, I had lost all hope. So why bother getting up and putting on clothes, right? And it wasn't until I finally got sober that I discovered my need for a belief in something more in life. I needed to believe in something. Up to that point, my concept of God or a higher power amounted to nothing more than a vague collection of, you know, ideas I had collected from books and movies and the occasional visit to church when I was a child. To be honest, it unnerved me to place my faith in something other than my immediate needs and ego. Faith was a real strange concept to me at that point in my life. At that stage of my life, my spiritual beliefs were as evolved as like a chimp's. Just give me a banana and leave me alone while I pick my navel and grunt. That was kind of my attitude. You know, just leave me alone enough. I don't need to deal with faith, this concept of faith. There's a reason why, and I want to emphasize this, there's a reason why alcohol is often called spirits. Because for many of us, we become spiritually empty. To the point where we seek spiritual fulfillment from a bottle. Okay? I believe with all my heart that human beings have an innate need for spiritual nourishment. It's written into our DNA. We need and want a life filled with hope, love, and faith. There is a deep craving within the human soul, in my belief, for more than just, you know, animal instincts and desires. We must have some kind of spiritual life of some kind, or we remain unfulfilled. And often it drives us to seek gratification from things that are harmful and destructive. I know that's certainly true in my case. It's particularly true for those of us with addictive personalities, like me, and most likely like you. If we don't feel spiritually fulfilled, we destroy ourselves by drinking, snorting, screwing, or eating everything within reach to fill the emptiness that's gnawing at our soul. Perhaps you know this feeling too. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. Maybe you don't feel completely hopeless, not yet, but there might be a desire within you for something more in life, a desire to feed your soul with things more nourishing than alcohol, drugs, or other self-destructive habits. For me personally, I was broken down and feeling hopeless. I felt exhausted and sick and wanted relief. Thankfully, and I'm going to get in this in a moment, the lifeline I was seeking was closer than I actually realized. Before I get into that, I want to talk about some of the red flags that were beginning to point me towards recovery, okay? There comes a point, if we're lucky, when we realize we can't continue living the way we have been living. For the most fortunate ones among us, and I consider myself one of those fortunate ones, we begin to notice the red flags. The red flags that keep showing up, clear indicators that something is not right, that maybe it's time to address the problems that always seem to accompany our drinking. For me, countless red flags kept popping up over the years. You know, warning signs that I chose to ignore until it was almost too late. I want to emphasize how lucky you are if you notice these red flags and take them seriously. And do take them seriously. If you notice these red flags, you know, you're so fortunate. Sadly, most people choose to ignore the signs, usually ending up with ruined lives, in jail, institutionalized, or, you know, worst case scenario, dead. It's a statistical fact that the vast majority of alcoholics and addicts in the world never receive the help they need. And it's usually because they choose not to ask for help. Millions of people die as alcoholics and addicts, fully aware of their condition, but too scared to take a leap of faith into recovery. And trust me, I've known many people who have passed away because of their fear of asking for help. For me, I put it off as long as I could. I had entirely accepted that I was an alcoholic. I was very aware of this fact in the final years. But it's kind of like knowing you have a serious heart problem, yet choosing not to go to the doctor because you're too frightened to face the treatment that will save you. Confronting and fixing the heart disease is often scarier than admitting you're sick in the first place. Many people just wait for the heart attack to take them out. The red flags were in my life were appearing with higher frequency, and they became impossible to ignore. I was always sick and hungover. I was financially broken in serious debt. I could never pay my bills on time. I had destroyed multiple relationships. I engaged in sexual behavior that was devoid of love or mutual respect. I had lost jobs because of my drinking. I lied to people about my life and the life I was living. I surrounded myself with the dregs of society, what we call lower companions. People who were, you know, hustlers, drug dealers, criminals, and I had no self-respect. I developed anxiety and paranoia. I was lonely and afraid. How many more times could I wake up on the floor of my kitchen not knowing how I got there? How many more times could I sneak large plastic bags of bottles and cans out of my apartment without my neighbors spotting me? How many more times could I lie to family and friends about the condition of my life? How many more times could I spit in the mirror, disgusted at by my reflection? And that is something I used to do. I used to spit in the mirror. I used to punch the walls. I knew I was reaching the bottom. At some point, we must admit that we've taken it as far as we can, that it's time to change. I knew with absolute certainty that if I continued living this way, I was going to die drunk and alone. And that's not what I wanted. And I'm sure you probably don't either. The final year of my drinking was marked by an experience in a motel room when I had drunk myself into an immobile stupor. I was collapsed on the floor and struggling to remain conscious. The amount of alcohol I had consumed that night was enough to kill a man twice my size. And I knew it was unlikely I would make it through the night, to be quite honest. And I was terrified and began to cry out to God for help. I didn't even know if I even believed in God, but I was desperate for a life preserver. And God seemed like the right choice at the moment. It seemed like the only choice at the moment. It was one of those things I had run out of ideas. And I prayed with everything I had in me, asking for another chance at life. Please don't let me die like this. That's what I kept praying. Please, God, if you exist, don't let me die like this. And miraculously, I survived. When I lifted myself off the floor the next morning, I vowed I would stop drinking. I promised I would stop drinking, and I didn't keep my vow. I continued to drink for another year, believe it or not. I tried everything I could do to stop on my own, but nothing worked. So filled with shame and guilt, I kept on drinking no matter how many times I declared no more. The compulsion to drink was just too overpowering, and there didn't seem to be any way of breaking free. My life in hell, and that's what I call it, my life in hell, which I created for myself, continued downward despite the red flags that surrounded me. So what was my behavior like in the final stages of my drinking? I was beginning to sense that I had lost my moral direction in life. In many ways, I had become a liar, a cheater, and even a thief. I never robbed houses. I didn't kill anyone or steal food from orphans. And for the most part, I was a nice person, usually polite and friendly. But the painful fact was that I had been living a life filled with immoral behavior for years. I had lied to family and friends about my drinking. I cheated on girlfriends when I was drunk. I took advantage of my employers. I contributed to crime when purchasing street drugs. I endangered the lives of others when I drove drunk. Drunk driving, that's a nasty, stupid thing to do, but I did it. I broke multiple laws when I drove intoxicated or engaged in drug transactions. I surrounded myself with lower companions, criminals, and sociopaths. I disrespected my family by putting my life in danger. I disrespected my body by poisoning it daily. I accumulated debt by spending all my money getting drunk and high. I borrowed money I couldn't repay. This is just a partial resume, but you get the point. Somewhere along the journey of my life, I had lost my moral grounding and the willingness to be honest with myself and with others. And I had slowly over time made the decision that the most important thing was having a good time, getting loaded and neglecting my responsibilities. And I dreaded the idea of growing up and becoming a responsible adult. So what better way to prevent that from happening than by staying drunk, foolish, and contemptuous of normal, healthy behavior? Selfishness is not something we want to admit about ourselves. Nobody wants to admit that they're self-centered, self-serving, or immoral. Not me. Certainly not me. Even at my lowest point, I still convinced myself I was a great guy, Mr. Upstanding Citizen. But the reality and the truth I had to face was that I was morally polluted. I had allowed myself to succumb to my lowest impulses. I lived for pleasure, immediate gratification, and excitement. The realization that I was morally bankrupt was painful to accept, but the truth was impossible to deny. It was one of the lowest, most difficult moments of my life. I had reached a point when I could no longer stand to look at myself in the mirror. I was ashamed of who I was and what I had allowed myself to become. I was starting to feel like the lowest of creatures, not much more than a slithering reptile whose sole purpose in life was to avoid pain and stay as numb as possible. I was desperate to find relief from the way I was living. So what was my lowest point? What was my rock bottom? Well, I had run out of excuses and time, that's for sure. I no longer had the luxury of ignoring the red flags anymore. I had to find a way to clean up my life and get sober, or I was facing a miserable and pathetic death. I was just going to be another alcoholic who disappears from the radar without a trace. If there was a Bermuda Triangle for alcoholics and addicts, my ship was heading for disaster. I know that's a cheesy metaphor, but it makes me laugh, so I like to use it. I finally hit rock bottom, and I'm grateful for that. Often people hear the term rock bottom and they think it means something negative. It certainly sounds negative, of course, but it's the lowest point in a hole where there's nowhere else to go, right? But if you're an alcoholic who wants to escape addiction, like I did, rock bottom is the starting place. Rock bottom means a new beginning for the addict, like myself, who genuinely wants to get clean and sober. Rock bottom means rebirth, all right? Rock bottom means rebirth. I had reached the stage of my polluted life, my addictive life, my addiction life, when I wanted help. I wanted help. It was more than just needing help. I wanted help. Enough is enough. Let's fix this shit before it's too late. So, recalling my vow to God the year before, I fell to my knees on a sunny December day. Okay. I was suffering through another horrible hangover when something inside me was triggered to make a sincere cry for help. Now, I went to a local church, and I was not a religious person by any means. And I fell to my knees in one of the pews. Okay. I was not a churchgoer. I didn't even know if I believed in God, but I was desperate. I hit my knees in the church and I prayed with all my mind, body, and soul, pleading for intervention. I needed help and was finally ready to accept it in whatever form it appeared. There's no other way, and a lot of people, have a hard time with this, but there's no other way to explain it but to say something changed in me that day, that moment. I left the church and called my friend. His name is Guy, and he was already sober. He was working on his sobriety already. And Guy told me to meet him at an AA meeting that night. And I promised I would, and this time I kept my promise. My path to sobriety finally began in earnest. And I haven't had a drink in more than, as of this recording, I haven't had a drink in more than 15 years. My descent to rock bottom took years, and I'm grateful to have survived. But the day I went to my first meeting was only the beginning, okay? I had a long way to climb out of the deep hole of addiction, which had left me spiritually and psychologically wounded. And I always emphasize to people that I got sober through a 12-step program. It's not for everybody, However you get sober is up to you, and whatever works. There's plenty of ways to get sober. 12 steps is just what I did. And, I just always share that with people. So whatever works for you, I think the 12 steps are great, but it's not for everybody, but it worked for me and I'm grateful for it. Getting and staying sober is not easy. And that's another thing I want to emphasize. Getting and staying sober is not easy. There's no reason to lie about it or make it sound like a picnic filled with cookies and cakes. The reality of staying sober requires a lot of work. It does. It also demands that we dig deep into our past and find out where things got so screwed up and why we do the crazy shit that we do. In my journey over the last 15 years, I've come to accept and embrace the fact that I'm slightly nuts. I'm incredibly neurotic. I struggle with a painful level of shyness. I'm socially awkward. I'm socially awkward to the point where I avoid people sometimes, especially groups. I'm self-conscious and I'm vain. I often feel entitled and superior to others. I can be incredibly selfish, and I have some really, really weird shit going on in my head. Okay, that's just a fact of who I am. But this is just who I am, and I've learned to be comfortable with myself. Through sobriety and in sobriety, I've learned to be happy with who I am, including this nutty mind of mine. Learning about ourselves and what makes us tick as human beings is part of the unique and exciting journey of recovery and sobriety. This gives us an opportunity to find out what we're made of. Okay, so I suggest highly to anybody who's thinking about getting sober, go for it. You're going to learn a lot about yourself. Some of it you're going to like, some of it you're not. As I was about to learn, getting and staying sober wasn't going to be easy, but it sure as hell wasn't going to be boring either. Okay? So I'm going to leave it right there until the next podcast, when I'm going to discuss a lot more. We're going to discuss all sorts of things in this podcast. I look forward to sharing more with you soon. And as I stated, if you get a chance, please visit me at my website, which is SoberMofos.com, or my YouTube channel, which is SoberMofos. And there's lots of information and stuff for you there to check out. And until we meet again, stay safe.